Pro-Life to the Max is produced and broadcast by WOMB 89.9 FM Catholic Radio in Bloomington, Indiana.
Ave Maria, welcome to Pro-Life to the Max, a weekly half-hour radio program under the patronage of St. Maximilian Mary Kolbe that is dedicated to keeping you informed on local, state, and national pro-life issues and efforts and inspiring you to get involved. I'm Rhonda Branham, here along with my co-host for life, Monica Siefker. Thanks for joining us today. Well, we all know that since the beginning of the year, the pro-life movement has been front and center again, just where it needs to be. A civilization simply cannot last for long when a people is killing its own unborn children. The fight for the right to life has gained new momentum since the passage of New York's abhorrent Reproductive Health Act, which saw the state legalize abortion up to the moment of birth and remove protections for babies born alive after a failed abortion. Others have followed suit, and states like Illinois, Alaska, Colorado, New Hampshire, Vermont, and Oregon all have no gestational limits on abortion. But what's going on in our own state of Indiana? How is the fight for the right to life going here, and are we making any headway? To answer these and other questions, we've got Mike Fichter, President and CEO of Indiana Right to Life, on the show today. But before we get much further, Monica, would you please start us off with prayer?
Absolutely. Heavenly Father, the beauty and dignity of human life was the crowning of your creation. You further ennobled that life when your Son became one with us in his incarnation. Help us to realize the sacredness of human life and to respect it from the moment of conception until the last moment at death. Give us courage to speak with truth and love and with conviction in defense of life. Help us to extend the gentle hand of mercy and forgiveness to those who do not reverence your gift of life. To all, grant pardon for the times we have failed to be grateful for your precious gift of life or to respect it in others. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
And now, this week's In the News.
A study published this past May in the medical journal Frontiers in Neuroscience is raising the alarm over potential and significant mental health effects for women who take abortion-inducing drugs. In the analysis, which was based on a 3-year study from Franciscan University, researchers examined the effects of RU486 on rats and observed depression, anxiety, loss of appetite, and decreased self-care in those mammals which were given the abortion drugs. Rats are commonly used in these types of studies because of their physiological and neurophysiological similarities to humans. The researchers from the study plan to continue investigating the effects of RU486 on women. Abortion drugs are responsible for the deaths of dozens of women worldwide, and a 2012 Planned Parenthood study even admitted at least one woman is seriously injured from the abortion pill every day. An alliance of close to 80 pro-abortion groups have recently released a document entitled Blueprint for Sexual and Reproductive Health, Rights, and Justice, laying out their vision for the future of abortion here in the U.S. The plan calls for legislation to end the Hyde Amendment and any related restrictions, the removal of conscience protections for healthcare providers who object to abortion, the elimination of parental notification requirements for minors seeking an abortion, and increasing the availability and awareness of self-managed or at-home abortions. Planned Parenthood, All Options, the American Civil Liberties Union, and Catholics for Choice are among the organizations who have endorsed the abortion document. And a Washington State abortionist recently gave an interview with a Seattle-based newspaper about her work, in which she called her profession compassionate. In the July 31st article, Sarah Prager described how she gave up her job of mountain climbing after spending time volunteering for Planned Parenthood. Seeing women come in feeling stigmatized and then leave feeling well cared for and supported, that just felt like really important work, Prager said. I realized that if I felt so strongly that women should have this access, I should actually be providing abortions myself. Prager doctor went on to describe how countless patients tell her that they do not believe in abortion, but they want to go through with it anyway, thinking that their situation warrants it. Prager ended the interview by saying, "If I can be a compassionate, skilled doctor for that person, maybe that will shift the needle. I don't know if I knew this in the beginning, but there is a way in which I can be an activist just by doing this work." And finally, around 25 unborn children were killed this past Thursday at the Bloomington Planned Parenthood. Women from across the Hoosier State, from Kentucky, and even one from as far away as Louisiana came to 421 South College Avenue to end the lives of their unborn children. The increase in both pro-life legislation as well as concerns over the safety of some abortion facilities are motivating women to travel great distances in order to procure an abortion right here in Bloomington. A newly released 911 recording of an ambulance run for a woman in distress at a Little Rock, Arkansas abortion center was yet another instance of the more than 60 times emergency personnel have been called to that particular facility. As the body of evidence continues to grow, showing that abortion is not safe, women are choosing carefully where they will go to get their abortions. And that's your weekly in the news.
So, Monica, we've had a lot of things going on in Indiana lately in regards to the pro-life movement and the fight for the legal protection of the unborn.
Yeah, we sure have, Rhonda. I think we still have a case pending in the Supreme Court about the constitutionality of a 2016 law requiring abortion providers to offer women the chance to see their unborn babies on ultrasound. And Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill has just announced that his office is going to proceed to summary judgment on recent legislation that seeks to ban dismemberment abortion. We've also got an abortion center that just opened up in South Bend by means of a judicial fiat that saw a federal judge overriding state licensing requirements that are there to protect women's lives. And I could just go on, but I'm going to stop right there and bring Mike Fichter, president and CEO of Indiana Right to Life, into this conversation. Hi, Mike, and welcome to Pro-Life to the Max.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about today because since the beginning of 2019, we've seen a flurry of legislation, pro-life as well as pro-abortion, in various states regarding the issue of abortion. And Mike, Indiana has tended to be one of the nation's leaders in getting pro-life legislation passed. So let's first start off by talking about a great law that was just passed back in 2016 called the Dignity for the Unborn Act of HEA 1337. It was signed by then Governor Mike Pence. What kinds of provisions were in this law and what kind of roadblocks did it run into?
Well, you know, that law is very interesting because there are so many provisions in it that, I mean, it's packed full of different items. Let's put it that way. This was an omnibus bill that, as it went along, just drew a lot of different things into it. But the primary, the number one thing that came out of that law was the civil rights provision that recognizes that unborn children may not be aborted solely on the basis of their race, of their national origin, of a potential disability, of Down syndrome, or their sex. And that was packed specifically under the Civil Rights Code in Indiana. And that was a key distinction between a lot of other laws that have passed in other states that have passed it strictly under the abortion code. In Indiana, it was passed under the Civil Rights Code. And that's just a really huge thing that we'll probably talk about here in a few minutes as to how that may play out into the courts. But of course, it also had the humane disposal provisions packed into it. Most people still don't realize that in Indiana, and this is the case with most states, there have been no type of regulations on what to do with the bodies of aborted babies after they've been aborted. Many of the listeners may have seen the film Unplanned, and one of those scenes from the Unplanned film that just stands out, I think, to everyone who sees it, is late in the movie when sidewalk counselors are praying and the disposal, the waste disposal guy brings out these big plastic gallon drums, and those are full of babies. And that's what is happening at abortion clinics across the United States. That's what is happening in Indiana until these new rules go into effect, which fortunately they now will. But we also have the ultrasound provision that you referenced in the introduction. That provision requires that a woman must be given the opportunity at least 18 hours prior to an abortion to see an ultrasound of her baby. Plus, there are many other things that were wrapped into that. And of course, as expected, the abortion groups were you know, from the very onset, were saying this goes too far, you can't do this, can't do that, can't do all of these different things. ACLU and Planned Parenthood have been engaged with this, doing their best to block all of these different provisions of the law. So from the very onset, and we expected it to, it created controversy. It's been bubbling through the courts. Some of the issues have been decided in the courts. Some are still undecided as they're moving through. But, you know, we knew this would be the case. We were bold in passing this. Governor Pence signed this into law, and it's still having repercussions today and a very strong effect.
Yeah, it is. So Mike, let's discuss the Supreme Court's May 28th decision in Box versus Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky. And the court denied certiorari for, I call it the eugenics provision in HEA 1337. So can you talk about that? And also tie in with that, Justice Clarence Thomas, his compelling opinion that went along with that was just remarkable, I thought. So can you speak to all that?
Yeah, Justice Clarence Thomas's opinion in Box versus Planned Parenthood, I think it's 26 pages. Everyone needs to Google that and read that and share that in their social networks. Yeah. Now, I have to be honest, when I saw that ruling came down, we knew, I think I had a call or an email or a text within minutes after that was released by the court. And when I first saw that it was a unanimous ruling not to accept the civil rights provision of it, and that unanimous means Clarence Thomas is a part of that. That at first was was very shocking.
Yes.
I'm wondering how on earth could Justice Thomas not have agreed to hear the appeal on this. But here's what's significant about what Thomas did and about his concurring opinion. Thomas made it very clear that the civil rights provision makes Indiana's law all about eugenics. And he did a wonderful job tracing Planned Parenthood's role in the eugenics movement and just running that through everything and tying it back to Indiana. And Justice Thomas made it extremely clear that the court's refusal to hear the appeal on this does not mean the court is ruling against the merits of Indiana's civil rights protections for the unborn. That ruling was based upon the court's desire that this percolate up through other districts other than the 7th District. So the way that I now see Clarence Thomas's concurring opinion on this was, number one, getting into official U.S. Supreme Court history, a 26-page analysis of how what we're doing with these unborn children is eugenics. And that's key because that is in American history archives now, that Clarence Thomas pointed out clearly what we are doing with these abortions. But secondly, I think Clarence Thomas was sending a clear signal to other states and clear signal to the pro-life movement that this is a compelling argument. It is novel, and that the Supreme Court has never since 1973 addressed abortion from the perspective of civil rights. And what Justice Thomas was saying is to other states, we're not hearing Indiana's because it's only come through one district. But I believe his direct quote in there is the Supreme Court must not and cannot avoid this issue. And so it was Clarence Thomas kicking the door wide open to other states to say the court will be willing possibly to look at this, but it needs to come through other districts. So he's really pleading with other states to follow Indiana's lead and say, even though we're not hearing this appeal right now, this is compelling. We need other states to percolate this up so that the court will grant full review to this. And I think it was also key. I think the last sentence in Clarence Thomas's concurring opinion on this, in which he wrote, the Constitution is silent on abortion. And that was sending the very clear message. As a strict constitutionalist, Justice Thomas was signaling Roe versus Wade is wrongly decided. Abortion is not an enshrined constitutional right, and it's time for that to be taken care of. And the eugenics and the civil rights aspect of it is the avenue to go. So it was very compelling in the way Thomas phrased all of that.
It was, and that's a good analysis of it all, Mike, and thanks for that. And I think it's a great strategy in the long run, too. I was really excited to read all that. Now, did Justice Thomas also, I can't recall, did he bring up Indiana's 1907 eugenics program that had that forced sterilization?
Yeah, he sure did. Okay. He made a big point out of that, and that's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up. Most folks have no idea that Indiana has a very sad and shameful eugenics history. And in fact, I have to say I never had any idea of this until a few years ago I was walking to the State House on the west side of the State House in downtown Indianapolis. There's a historical marker that no one stops to read. Well, I stopped to read it because I do that when I see historical markers, and realized that in 1907, Indiana passed a law of forced sterilization of individuals that the state identified as those that they didn't want their kind to reproduce in the state. That's not a direct quote of what, but that's the intent. That's what Indiana's intent was in passing that 1907 law. And that marker that is on the west side of the State House lawn really draws attention to that in a way of this was a dark chapter of Indiana history, and in pointing out that, you know, it's unthinkable to us now, but Indiana had this policy in place, and it triggered a lot of legal battles in the state of Indiana. And portions of that eugenics law remained in place until Governor Otis Bowen in the early 70s finally revoked all of that. So Clarence Thomas brilliantly said, this isn't the first time that we've dealt with eugenics out of the state of Indiana. He harkened back to that 1907 law. So for those who may be visiting Indianapolis sometime and you're downtown, take a few minutes, stroll to the west side of the Capitol building, and you'll find this historical marker that since I discovered that, and I've mentioned it to other folks, I've only found one state legislator who has seen that marker. Every other legislator that I talk to has never even known that it existed, and yet there it is in the shadows of the State House.
Wow. It is, and this is part of the education, too, that making that connection between eugenics and abortion, too. It's so pivotal.
Yes,
it all plays part.
So, Mike, in regards to the ultrasound provision of this legislation, are we still waiting on the High Court to see if they will hear Indiana's appeal? And how has the injunction on this provision of HEA 1337 led to the rise in abortion numbers here in Indiana?
Great question. The ultrasound provision, we still don't know if the court's going to hear the appeal on it. And this is a strange situation in that the state made the appeal to the Supreme Court, I believe, in January or February to hear the ultrasound appeal. And the court just kept putting that, you know, pushing it back on the agenda. Well, now the court's in recess, and the court will not start considering appeals again until October. So at this point, it's in limbo right now. But what's unusual about this is if you follow the Supreme Court, normally when appeals are made to the Supreme Court, the vast majority, the overwhelming majority of them, the court looks at them and says, nope, not going to hear it, and just rejects it outright. And that is a clear sign the court's not willing in reopening most of the appeals that are made on that level. The ultrasound provision, when the court was still in session, that appeal was, I'm wanting to think top of my head, something like 8, 9, 10 weeks. It kept being rescheduled. And the interesting thing from a Supreme Court footnote on this that many listeners may not know is that when the Supreme Court decides whether it's going to hear any appeal from any state, that decision is made strictly amongst the 9 justices on the court. It's a closed-door setting. No one, no clerks, no media, no one else is included in those discussions. It's totally closed door. Only the 9 justices are going to discuss that.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, and so normally it's something that an appeal is made and the courts just make pretty quick work of saying, nope, not going to hear it, nope, not going to hear it, nope, not going to hear it. So all of my friends that are attorneys that follow this closely, they tell me that if the court is not making a quick decision, that's normally a really, really good sign that they are having a deep discussion on this. So we're not going to know. It's not going to be reslated for consideration until October of this year. But hearkening back to what we just talked about with the civil rights aspect of it and also the humane disposal, what's key about that is that the debate on that appeal, I think that went on for maybe 3 or 4 months before the court finally issued their ruling on that, which, of course, they upheld the fetal disposal provision of that, but said we're not going to hear the appeal on the civil rights. I think that was case in point that they spent a lot of time looking at that appeal because there was a lot of internal discussion on both of those provisions. So we're expecting the same things going on with the ultrasound provision. And to the second part of your question, we can show on a chart that when the ultrasound provision actually went into effect during those first 6 months when the law was fully in effect in the state of Indiana, abortions dropped by over 400 kids in the state of Indiana during that period of time. Once the federal judge put an injunction on that law, you look at the 6 months after the injunction went into effect and the ultrasound provision went away, the abortion numbers jumped by almost that exact same number. That's not coincidental. That is not coincidental that the ultrasound law had that big of an impact on it. And now that that ultrasound law has been blocked for more than a year, during that year, we've seen Indiana's 2018 abortion numbers come out. And sure enough, we're seeing the abortion numbers continue to increase in the state of Indiana. And the ultrasound law blockage is certainly not the only reason for that, but it is a massive reason. It's a big chunk of that proportional reasoning as to why we believe abortions are rising in the state of Indiana. And incredibly, the abortion people, as they're arguing to block this law permanently, are basically saying this has no impact whatsoever. It's a worthless law. And that it doesn't influence women one way or the other on this period. And yet we can show the numbers graphically and say it has a, we can show directly when it's in effect, numbers drop. When it's blocked, the numbers started going back up again.
Absolutely. That's all part of educating the woman, too. What are you carrying there? As you know, the real life.
Well,
human
being. You always have to ask that question on, as you said, educating women, those groups that support abortion, that claim that they represent women's health and the rights of women and so forth. Why is it? Why is it that for those groups who claim they want women to make all of these decisions and have this right to an abortion, when it comes to giving women full information, such as seeing an ultrasound of their unborn baby, suddenly the wall goes up and they don't want women to see that information?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, spoke about the rise in the abortion numbers last year. So let's talk about that, because the new data for 2018 was just released by the Indiana State Department of Health. And yeah, as you mentioned, abortion numbers are up again. That's the second year in a row. I think there were, 7,778 children killed in 2017. And then in 2018, that figure rose to 8,037. So what are some, you spoke about the ultrasound provision being blocked. That's one reason. What are some of the other reasons for maybe this increase in figures?
Well, two that we're definitely picking up as trending in Indiana. One is the increasing rise of chemical abortifacients. And what we suspect, just by looking at the surface numbers of that, is that the chemical abortions are being sold as a much more convenient type of abortion by the abortion providers to women. So it doesn't have the same negative sort of context as a surgical abortion. Mm-hmm. So the rise in chemical abortions is definitely playing into these increased numbers. But also, and this is even a more significant stat, we're seeing an increased number of out-of-state women coming to Indiana for their abortions.
And we see that at Bloomington all the time, Rhonda and I do. With all these women, especially from Kentucky, we see so many.
Yeah, here's what we suspect is going on with that. In Kentucky, there is one abortion clinic from an independent vendor that's operating in Louisville, Kentucky. Planned Parenthood had created this new center. They started doing abortions before Governor Matt Bevin took office without a license. When Governor Bevin took office, the state of Kentucky stepped in and stop those abortions. Now there's an ongoing lawsuit between Planned Parenthood and the state of Kentucky over that whole licensing issue there. So in the meantime, women who are coming to Louisville's Planned Parenthood, they're being sent to Indianapolis primarily, but also to Bloomington's Planned Parenthood for abortions. And the reason for that, I think, is pretty clear. It's a business decision on Planned Parenthood's part. They are not going to send women coming into their Louisville clinic to the independent operator, because that's money out of their pocket. So from a business perspective, Planned Parenthood wants to make sure they keep the money in the family. So if a woman's coming into Louisville's Planned Parenthood, they're going to refer her to a Planned Parenthood in Indiana, because that keeps the cash revenue in their pocket.
Yeah. So, Mike, how many facilities are doing abortions in Indiana, and which one does the most?
The largest in Indiana is clearly the Planned Parenthood at 86th in Georgetown. That's on the north side of Indianapolis. And let me just interject and say, thankfully, the Women's Care Center, they have a beautiful building, beautiful ministry directly next door to the Planned Parenthood. So we don't know how many decisions have been made to not have an abortion because of the Women's Care Center. I'm sure their folks could give you those numbers. But thankfully in Indiana, we have that wonderful pro-life center that's directly next door to the Planned Parenthood. But then we have Planned Parenthoods in Merrillville. We have a new abortion clinic that's now doing chemical abortions in South Bend. We have an abortion clinic in West Lafayette. We have an independent operator in Indianapolis as well. We have an abortion clinic in Bloomington. So unfortunately, we have quite a few here in the state of Indiana. You know, it is something that as we look at, particularly the South Bend situation, heartbreaking to know that South Bend was abortion clinic free starting in, I believe, 2015 or 2016. And now, sadly, because of the judge's ruling mentioned in the introductory remarks that you made, sadly, that's not the case anymore.
Yeah. And real quickly, too, you know what, Mike, of course, you know this, we saw Bloomington's numbers, though, going down. And we were kind of like shocked here, I have to admit, a little bit. Any thoughts on why that is?
I'm not 100% sure about what the situation may be in Bloomington, although in Bloomington, you have a Women's Care Center now that has started its ministry next door as well. So my suspicion would be the Women's Care Center is having a major impact in ministering to women right there
in
the community. And of course, I don't want to downplay as well, and Monica, you have been a spearhead for this. I don't want to downplay at all the role of prayer in Bloomington, because that, you know, we can look at laws that we pass. We can look at a lot of different aspects of all of this, and that makes it very easy to overlook the efficacy of prayer.
I think you're right, just
lifting this up. And I know that's been a heavy focus in Bloomington, and there is no doubt that that's having an impact in Bloomington as well.
So in 2018, it appears that there were 11 dismemberment abortions done in Indiana. And this past spring, Indiana lawmakers voted to outlaw this barbaric procedure, but a federal judge has blocked that law. What are the plans to fight this unjust ruling?
Well, this is definitely something that the Indiana Attorney General is appealing, and there's been an injunction placed against that law, and the Attorney General, rather than extend this out by arguing about the injunction portion of it, is just moving straight ahead to focus on the constitutional nature of this. We feel that this law is on solid constitutional ground. When you look at precedent, the Supreme Court has already upheld the right for states to bar the gruesome partial birth abortion procedure. So we feel like the dismemberment ban is on solid ground because the court's already on record as showing that a state may bar a specific procedure. But, of course, at the lower levels, are just a killing field for every pro-life law that we passed. It's become so predictable now that you pass something, judge at level number one is going to place an injunction on it. It's just a given. It's an automatic. But now, as it percolates up to the full Seventh Circuit, the Seventh Circuit has become more conservative, and we're very optimistic that the Seventh Circuit is going to rule in Indiana's favor. At that point, the abortion industry probably percolates it up to the Supreme Court, and it may end up being one of those cases that becomes a direct challenge to Roe versus Wade. And that's very important to understand, that a direct challenge to Roe does not necessarily have to come from the strongest law that may be attempted out there. Anything that's abortion-related before a willing court can lead to the court to say, hey, this is our springboard where we're actually going to open up the entire framework of Roe and reconsider that. So there's a long legal battle ahead still for the dismemberment abortions.
Okay, Mike, thank you so much, because we're really right up against the time here. So we sure do appreciate your taking the time to speak with us and our listeners today just about all the important pro-life items going on right here in our own state.
Well, it's an honor to be on, and glad to come on anytime.
Well, Mike Fichter, President and CEO of Indiana Right to Life, whose mission is to protect the right to life, especially of unborn children, through positive education, compassionate advocacy, and promotion of healthy alternatives to abortion. May God reward you for all you do, and we ask Him to shower you with many blessings and to make your work fruitful. Hopefully you can join us again sometime.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks so much for being with us today. We are truly grateful for your prayers and support of this ministry. Remember, you can always listen to past shows by going to wombradio.com. And if you have any questions or comments, be sure to just click on that Contact Us Now button right there on the website. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, let us heed the warning of St. Maximilian Mary Kolbe that the most deadly poison of our time is indifference. Let's pray for one another that we may be consumed with a desire to save lives and souls, to give the greatest possible honor and glory to God. Ave Maria.
Ave Maria.
Thank you for listening to Pro-Life to the Max, a production of WOMB Catholic Radio. To learn more about this program and how you can help us to continue to produce and broadcast this content, visit us online at wombradio.com.